This episode of The Tour Life is also brought to you by Optimize Touring. If you're interested in learning how you can bring health and wellness on tour with you, whether it's a small van tour or a huge arena tour, go to optimizetouring.com to learn more. Welcome to The Tour Life podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a tour manager and audio engineer who has toured with artists such as Mini Mansions, The Record Company, The Growlers, Crash Kings, Nico Vega, Crooked Colors, and Rufus Du Sol, among many others. In this episode, we discuss overcoming tough times, giving back, the pitfalls of social media, setting professional communication boundaries, and knowing when to pivot. You can find him on his website, firepitsessions.com, and on Instagram at adam_labov. Here is my conversation with the beautiful soul who told me exactly what I needed to hear when I needed it most, Adam Labov. Hey, Adam, thank you so much for joining me on the Tour Life podcast. It's so nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. Thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, I was looking at your Instagram today, and actually I need you to tell me a really quick story before you even tell me how you got into the industry and the whole thing. Tell me about that $100 bill in Japan.
Oh, yeah. So Japan, that's an interesting place for me. I think I've been to Japan about 8 times or so at this point. First time I went there was with a very good friend named Brian. And that was just kind of some friends hanging out. And I've been there a few times on tour doing some festivals and some just regular shows over there. And I've just been really taken by Japan. And I'm sure as a foreigner, I don't fully understand the culture because I don't speak the language. But I've been trying to figure out more about it. Just I'm fascinated with how life is there, why they have certain things that we don't, why people seem to behave the way they do compared to maybe my experience here in the States. And I remember with regards to the $100 bill thing, people were asking, well, why do you like Japan so much? I'm like, honestly, it seems like there's so much integrity and honesty built into the culture. And I don't know if that's like a front and there's like a lot of stuff we don't see, but my interactions with people is like, they're always trustworthy, especially when we've done shows there. And everyone's just polite. And I was like, it's the kind of place where you could put $100 bill, or if you lost $100 bill, they would do everything in their power to get it back to you. And I have Japanese friends who have told me like, they've like, you know, they left a pen at a restaurant to sign a check and they came running after the street to find them, to give them back their pen or something like that. So I had a chance to go, I was inspired by this book I read called Ikigai, which is kind of a Japanese philosophy book on health and long living. And it talked about Okinawa, the island of Okinawa, and how it's one of the, I think it's one of the 7 or 5 blue zones, which I'm not sure if you are familiar with blue zones, but it's where people tend to live the longest. And so I wanted to go there and see what was going on and just how I could better my health and my quality of life. So I was there in Okinawa and then I came back to Tokyo and I was telling my Japanese friend about this and I was like, will you help me do this? And we took $100 bill. I had her translate from English to Japanese what I was trying to say. And we put this $100 bill up to see how long people would just let it sit there. And it was actually my last day in Japan. So I just had her checking on it. And believe it or not, it lasted 6 or 7 days up on that wall, a real $100 bill.
No way.
Just saying like, as a visitor, I've been, you know, I've been loving your country and the honesty and how people treat each other. And I'm going to leave this up there as an experiment to see how long this will last. And I hope that whoever ends up taking this ends up using it for a good purpose. So yeah, it was just kind of an interesting thing, like knowing if I did that thing in LA, that would, you know, involve a giant fight breaking out in a matter of moments. You know, it's a different philosophy there.
That is so cool. Yeah, it's funny when you mentioned Blue Zones, it didn't ring a bell. And I was like, wait, no, I know all about Blue Zones, actually. But yeah, no, it is. There's a lot of Blue Zones in the world where, and that's where people live the longest, right?
Right. There's Greece has, I believe, one and another island in the Mediterranean. There's a place up in Northern California that's a Jesuit community that fits that bill. Okinawa. And then I feel like there's someplace in Italy. Maybe it's an island in Italy.
There is. Yeah. No, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. Well, that tells me a lot about you, I think. the fact that stuff interests you and that you're curious about finding out kind of, you know, how people would react to things in different places. So I would like to know how you started your career in the industry. Like, what actually made you curious about even pursuing anything with music?
Sure. You know, it all started when I was very young. I was brought up musically. I played trumpet. I played piano. My dad sang in a choir. So music was just always around me. And when I was really young, I wanted to be a conductor for, you know, an orchestra kind of thing. Because I would go to symphonies and I just loved being at a concert hall and hearing all the different instruments. And, you know, my dad always told me, he remembers the story where I heard some symphony on the radio where I was like, oh, I said something about the trombones. And he's like, there's no trombones playing. And then after he listened again, he's like, oh, yeah, there are some trombones playing. So it's like, I've kind of had just like a musical knack my whole life. But I'd say it really started when I was 13 and I saw a band called Nirvana. And that was my first concert, rock and roll concert I got to go to. So I saw Nirvana in October of 93. That was their In Utero tour. That was about 6 months before Kurt killed himself. So I was lucky enough to see Nirvana. And even though I was kind of deaf for the whole weekend after, and I was really worried I lost my hearing, there was just something about seeing a concert like that that just blew my mind, and the intensity, not only with the sound, but just being in a group that large or in an arena that large with that many people and feeding that energy. It was unlike anything I'd ever felt before, even like professional sports. It was incredible. So I just started going from there, and I saw Nirvana a few months later, actually on the day that Kurt was found dead. I saw Pearl Jam play. I saw Soundgarden Super Unknown tour after that. And then I saw Pink Floyd's Pulse tour. And then I saw Phish, which a lot of people would laugh at, but being from New England, you know, that's a band that I grew up with and I've seen like 80 times. And I still would argue is some of the best live shows you'll ever see. So yeah, it started at an early age. I didn't know anything about audio per se, or like that mixing gear was even a thing. I had no idea. So I didn't even consider a career in it. I just know I liked it. And I, throughout high school, kept going to concerts as many as I could and seeing as many people as I could, driving out of the way. You know, we grew up in Maine, so it's like the closest thing is Boston. So I remember just driving down to Boston to see bands I liked, and it just kind of grew from there. And when I was 18, I took some recording classes at a place in Maryland where my family had moved down from Maine, and saw my first mixing board, and I was like, oh my God, I can control the vocal here and, you know, a guitar here and make them sound different or change the volume or anything that, you know, you can do in the audio world. And it just kind of blew my mind. And I was just really intrigued and took some classes and bought some recording gear and, you know, did that, moved back to Maine for a summer and recorded a record at a house with two different friends. And that was kind of like the start of my audio, you know, I wouldn't say career, but, you know, interest. And it's just kind of grown from there to, you know, the career I have now.
I love that. It's funny that even when you were little, you were able to pick out the different pieces.
I guess I had an ear for it. I don't know. Music kind of speaks to me in a way. Sometimes words don't come out of my mouth as I want, or I can't draw a picture as well as I want. Sometimes what I get from music is what I'm feeling or what I'm trying to say without me saying it. So yeah, music is life for me, and it's got me through a lot of things, and it's provided lots of happiness. And luckily in the last, 15 or so years, it's taken me to 5 continents and multiple countries, and has really just become a lifestyle and one I'm really grateful for. It's opened the world to me.
What's one of those things that music has gotten you through?
Well, that's a good question. I think I mentioned to you, I got really sick at one point and actually had a kidney transplant. And without getting too deep into that, it involved being at home for 5 years and, being tied up to machines and not being able to necessarily leave and do a lot of things I wanted to do. So one thing I had was music. I can remember listening to Quadrophenia the first time and just like feeling something really special about that record. That was like right in the middle of that time. I remember getting into Frank Zappa a lot and just loving that music. And I don't know, music was just that friend I didn't have during that period of time, even though I had lots of friends, like everyone was off at college and I didn't get to really see anyone for about 5 years. So yeah, it provided that crutch and outlet. And, if it was like a Tool record or Pantera, it was a great way to get things out. If it was a jazz record or something classical, maybe a little more mellow, my interest in music are pretty widespread in terms of genre and appreciating just musical ability and people trying to, do something a little different.
What about the way that, I kind of see parallels between having to basically be out for 5 years, working like while your body's healing and you're working on that. Mm-hmm. I see a parallel with kind of what's happening now.
With COVID?
Yeah, with COVID. It's like, sure. Did that prepare you in any way, shape, or form to deal with what's happening now in the world?
Absolutely. I think it shaped my whole life, and I'd say for the better. When you deal with a chronic illness that would kill you if it was 50 years ago and you didn't have the ability to do a transplant, it puts things in perspective really quickly. It humbles you. It shows you what's important, what isn't. So I think as it relates to COVID, my life, as probably every other engineer you've spoken to, has stopped with the audio world, and just having the mindset to be strong and, knowing that you can get through it and it will get better. It's played a huge role. I'd say going through something like that for me has like maybe lessened my emotional capabilities. And what I mean by that is I might not get as excited, or I might not get as sad or as upset. I think I'm just a lot more level-headed because I've been through the ringer and I've really, had to deal with some pretty terrible things. So, this other stuff doesn't seem quite as bad. And I think going through something like that, anyone who's been through any kind of chronic illness or, traumatic event, which at this point in our lives, many of us have had these things happen. I think it just prepares you, to just, see what's important, be grateful for what you have, and try to figure out how to make things better. A word I've been using a lot lately is pivot. And you have to be ready to pivot. And not just expect things to come to you, not expect the government to bail you out, not expect anyone to help you, except yourself. And you have to sometimes pivot to make that decision based on the situation at hand. So for me, I've been focusing my, time and energy on other things right now, because the music industry is completely shut down. And as bummed as I am about not being in Europe with Pearl Jam right now, as I should have been, I'm trying to progress and make my life, worth living right now. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I'm just saying try to fulfill as much as I can and not have this 1 or 2 year period go by without accomplishing anything. So I'm focusing on that and trying to, better the situation that I've been given with COVID and everything that entails. And I encourage people to do the same and pick up a book or do those things you always complain that you didn't have enough time to do. to now do them, to pick a new hobby, to call a friend, call your parents, do all those things that you claim to never have time for. Because now we inevitably probably have more time than we've had before.
Yeah, more time than we would like sometimes, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to get bored, but like I said, I try to fill my time. Time is fleeting, and it's the only thing we're really given, you know? So you got to make the most of it. I know it sounds cliche, but I truly believe that. I kind of look at it, it's like, well, if today was the last day I lived, was it a good one? So if you can say yes to that for every day, or at least most days, then, you know, hopefully your overall happiness is going to get you in a place that you're enjoying life and making yourself and everyone around you better.
Yeah, I completely agree. It was interesting, as you were telling me all that, you mentioned that you, like, from everything that you've gone through, especially with the kidney transplant and everything, that you learned to be more level-headed.
Yeah.
And how has that played out in your life now? It kind of made me think about, like, my son's uncle. He is a doctor at Riley Children's Hospital in Indianapolis. And so right now and every day for his entire career, he sees a lot of babies in the ICU, and he sees a lot of things, and he's very level-headed.
Yeah.
And the way that clashes with the reactivity of the average person, especially within the family, is definitely something that I notice. And I wonder, is that something that you experience in any way?
Yes and no. I think people sometimes would take my lack of a big reaction in any way, as maybe a lack of caring. But really it's just kind of, I don't know. It's hard to explain. I think everyone's different when it comes to how they deal with these sorts of things. Everyone's different emotionally aware, and even people will go in and out of that depending on things that are happening around them. I don't know. I think for me, it's helped. I think it's, as I've gotten older and I've had to deal with quote unquote more life problems, it makes you buckle down and really try to figure it out, instead of maybe being emotional or having a reaction that could then set off another chain of events that you don't need to do. I'm not sure if I'm really answering your question that well there. That's just been the way I've chosen things. And, you know, I used to have a hot head personality, maybe get angry too fast or for the wrong reasons or yell. And I've just realized there's better ways of dealing with problems. Even though sometimes it feels really good to tell people what you think of them, there's usually better ways to deal with it. So yeah, I think everyone treats that kind of differently in how they respond emotionally to events that, you know, seem out of the ordinary. And if, you know, as a doctor, I'm sure he's used to dealing with good and bad things and is, you know, just become, I wouldn't say numb to that, but just accustomed to that. Whereas maybe other people in your family aren't, you know, that's not on the forefront of what they do every day. So it might seem more shocking, or that, you know, a different kind of reaction is warranted.
Yeah, I can totally see that. And I find it interesting when people get to a stage in their life when they're able to really kind of take a step back and really think about things before they react. Mm-hmm. And getting to that point in your life, I feel, takes a lot of work
for a
lot of people. And so how does one get to that point? What are the things that you've actually experienced that have gotten you to that point outside of your 5-year experience with your kidney condition? And how do you stay sane in times where you may want to revert back to how you were?
Yeah. I think a lot of it comes from my parents and having them being very level-headed throughout the whole experience. One thing I haven't mentioned is the person I got the transplant was my father. That's kind of like a gift you can never repay. Though I'm trying to live my life as best as I can, as a sort of repayment for that. But no, I think they they kept me, they got me through that. And emotionally and physically, yeah, it took a lot. It took a village to make that work. So yeah, I think you need people that you trust around you, that you respect their opinion. You know, my parents are about as gentle as they come. And there are many times where I've, you know, lost my temper about this, that, or the other. And though they might agree with me, you know, their cooler heads will usually prevail and help me see what's important instead of all the extracurricular stuff that might be inciting those kinds of anger issues. I think surrounding yourself with people, if you don't have a family that provides that, then surrounding yourself with friends or mentors or people that just bring that kind of attitude to you, I think that helps a lot with dealing with life problems. I think if you're lucky enough to have that kind of support system in place, then it really helps. And if you don't, it's important to go seek it out, because, you know, we can't just do this alone. There are times when you get knocked down, you need some help up. I think everyone can relate to that at one point or another in your life.
That's something that, you know, just even realizing that it's okay to ask for help is something that I think can be really difficult. And I, you know, it definitely, I think, has to do with your upbringing and whether you've had experience asking for help and whether it was okay to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And do you think that the upbringing that your parents gave you helped you so that, I mean, you made a move across the country, right?
I did. Yeah. After I got better from this, I got my car and drove cross country knowing I might have to just turn around. But yeah, I had the support to do that.
So how did it feel? Was it scary for you, or was it?
It wasn't scary. I've always been a person who's been independent. Even well before I got sick, I was always like the kid who would be at his friend's house all day and come home to, you know, fuel up, as my parents would say, on dinner, and then leave again. But, you know, moving to California when you're 20, I think I was 22 at the time. I had a few friends out here, some really great friends from Maine where I grew up. So that was a great starting point. But yeah, you're on the other side of the world. You're unsure about your health. You haven't been able to go to college, so you don't necessarily have the quote unquote educational background that people are looking for, especially before I got into audio. So, you know, the realities of like this world were becoming apparent more so than the sickness and all that. It was like real life stuff, getting an apartment, you know, just the things that everyone does when they're that age for the first time. And yeah, it was really important to have a support system there. And, you know, not from a only mental point of view, but financially, my parents were very helpful and that helped me, you know, do the things I wanted to do and felt like I wanted to do. Especially after being sick, I didn't want to just get a job to get a job. That was the last thing I wanted to do. I wanted to actually do something that interested me and made me happy for a change. So yeah, that wouldn't have happened without that support and the support of my friends out here that were lucky enough to be living here before I came here. And yeah, I kind of felt like I had a West Coast family, upon arrival. And that was really important for not only me getting going, but getting me to stay here. And yeah, California has been great to me. I've been here 17 years, and as you know, I've matured, I've gotten social help from a lot of friends, from a lot of the bands I work with. I feel like I, even though my family's on the East Coast, I have all these new families on the West Coast of all the bands that I tour with and spend time on the road with and literally live with for weeks or months on end. So I think everyone needs that kind of support in one way or another. And it's great to seek it out and welcome it.
I see that you really value the help that you get from others and you really appreciate it. Is that what sparked your want to give back through your project, Fire Pit Sessions?
It's part of it. I'd say, you know, the beginnings of it were just like, let's throw a good party. Everyone likes a good party. I've always liked hosting parties. I hosted great parties in high school. And when I moved to LA and purchased this home in 2006, I now had a chance to kind of do my own thing and it was big enough to have a yard in the back, which most places in LA don't have. I had my friend build decks to make the place better, which then became the stages of the place. Like, Fire Pit is a way of giving back to the community, the music community that's been so good to me. We never charge ticket prices or any of that. It's one of those things where it's like, if you're there, you were meant to be there, but we don't ever advertise on social media or any of that stuff, just because too many people would come. So it's really just kind of a celebration of not only the bands I work with and giving them an opportunity to try out new material, or maybe, you know, it was kind of inspired by MTV Unplugged and all the bands I loved, some of which I already mentioned, like Nirvana and Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, taking these angsty electric songs and giving a different vibe. And I loved that. And that was kind of an inspiration for Fire Pit. But in terms of giving back, yeah, it's a way of bringing the community together, which I think is important. It's a way of trying to maybe take ego out of it, in that, like, there's never a headliner per se. There's an order which bands play, but it's not necessarily like who's headlining. I feel like everyone's headlining, and giving everyone an equal opportunity to showcase some songs and to meet new people and to, you know, meet fellow musicians. It's really meant as a networking event and just to bring a good vibe into, you know, the neighborhood. And Silver Lake luckily is a pretty cool neighborhood that way, with a lot of artists and musicians living there. And, you know, it's just something that feels good to do. Even though it's only like once a year, it's, people ask me, when's it happening? When are you doing it next? And that's a great feeling, because I know it's bringing joy to people, and it's something a little different than going to just a standard, you know, a venue. It's literally in my backyard, and there's a whole set of, you know, audio challenges and all these things. But, you know, we've worked on it over the years, and it seems to be getting better, and people have a good time. So I like making people happy, and we'll continue to do it as long as it seems feasible.
So what are some of the things that you've learned from starting that project?
Well, I just learned it's good to bring people together just for the sake of doing it. And just to see the energy that, you know, comes from that, is, it's a great thing. I've seen bands that have played the same nights who didn't know each other, and then were so impressed with each other that they then would do shows together. Maybe some band members would play with each other. And I love seeing those collaborations come together. I see friends who maybe haven't seen each other in a few years, and maybe bands that aren't talking anymore, come together and be together in my backyard for the first time in years. And that makes me happy. And then, you know, maybe they talk about playing again. So it's really just trying to, like, take money out of the equation, because money just kind of screws everything up, especially when, let's be honest, there isn't much money in music and club shows. So, like, why argue about tens of dollars or hundreds of dollars? It's just not worth it. And it's a way of leaving your ego at the door. And just trying to, you know, bring people together for the greater good of it. And that's what it's taught me, is it's been a good life lesson for just watching, you know, you bring good people together, good things will happen. And I'm a true believer in that. And, you know, having good ideas, good, be it musical or just life in general, it'll spawn new, better ideas. And I hope that's what it's been for people. And for other people, it's been a place where you can come and just get drunk and listen to music or check out some lights or whatever. It's, you know, you ask 100 people, you'll probably get 100 different answers. And that's the beautiful thing with it. It's everyone's own subjective opinion. So it is what it is, but I'm happy to host it and to have bands. I'm, you know, very grateful for all the bands who have played for free, that I might add. And I hope they've had a good time. You know, some of the bands have told me it's been some of the best shows that they've ever played. Some don't know what they're getting into, and they're just recommendations from friends, and it comes together, and it's, you know, I'm blown away by how good those bands are. And I think they're blown away by how receptive the audience is and the space. And it's just kind of one of those things where you have to be there. We try to capture it, you know, as best we can, but on, you know, on video, and, you know, we'll record things after and mix them, but it's really about being there. So,
yeah, I love that so much. And It's nice to just do something for the art of it and for the sake of it.
Yeah.
And you mentioned ego a couple times. Mm-hmm. So is this one of the ways that you practice taking ego out of the equation? Are there other ways that you do that?
To take ego out of the equation? Well, you know, I'm not saying ego is a bad thing. I think ego can be a good thing if used correctly. The music business that I've seen, you know, a lot of it is image driven. So people act a certain way, or they dress a certain way, or they think they need to behave a certain way. I don't know. I'm over people with egos that can't back them up. It's not impressive to me. I'd rather, like, you know, actions speak louder than words. That's something I like to say a lot, because I believe it. And, you know, having lived in LA for 15 or 17 years now, like, I've heard a lot of BS and I've heard a lot of great stuff too. And it's now becoming easier to differentiate between the two. But what I've learned is it's good to be confident, but not assume you have all the answers, or not assume it can't be done better. And those are the people I tend to work better with and that I seek to work at. Like, I purposely haven't taken the route of trying to mix for big pop acts, because it doesn't really interest me, neither musically nor the, you know, maybe the ego that comes with it. So, you know, and for some people, they want to go mix these huge acts, and that's great. So it's, you know, it's what floats your boat. For me, ego coming at me doesn't impress me, and there's better ways to deal with it. But it's, you know, expected in a business like this. And, you know, sometimes you need to pull that card to get what you want. But entitlement and ego, I find in the long run, isn't going to get you anything great.
Yeah. Entitlement is not the best.
No, it's good to earn things.
Yeah.
It's good exactly. To learn things as you go along.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you're right. It's like, you have to show people, you know, what you can give them. You know, if you always lead with gratitude, and you lead with, you know, how can I solve a problem for you?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody approaches it that way, you end up solving a lot and avoiding a lot of problems.
Yeah, exactly. I think communication is key, not only in this business, just in life in general. It seems like so many disagreements are just from a lack of communication, or poor communication, or not expressing your true feelings until it really matters, and then it's a little late. Yeah, I think, you know, just keep it real with people, and it's okay to have an opinion, and it's okay to stick up for what you believe. And, you know, sometimes those things will clash with people, and, you know, then you learn who you can work with and who you want to hang out with. And that's all right. You don't have to hang out with everyone, or, you know, find your group and figure out what works for you.
So something that you shared with me prior to us talking was a quote you put: think for yourself and question authority. And trust me, I love that. I mean, so because I teach high school, it's kind of funny that I'll talk to my students and I'll tell them, I'm like, no, it's okay to question what I say. Like, it's totally fine. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And it's such a shocking thing for them to hear from an adult, which I think is sad. So tell me, where does that affinity for thinking for yourself come from for you?
Well, it kind of happened from an early age. I was either that kid in school that teachers either loved or they hated. I wasn't just there. And I think the ones that loved me loved my curious mind, my questions. If I don't understand something, I'm going to ask why. I'm going to ask how. My dad was a scientist, or is a scientist. So I think I just have that kind of mind to ask questions in general, and not to just accept things for how they are. I think that's just something that's good life advice, be it with what you're seeing now with all the racial stuff coming out, you know, or just how things are taught in school, like our history, you know, there's just lots of things that, you know, even statistics, like, statistics can be used to prove anything they want. It doesn't mean it's relevant or correct. So I think it's just knowing, you know, what to really trust. And if you don't trust something, ask questions about it. Why, or why doesn't this make sense? And hopefully you'll get a good answer. But I've always just been that. I've never liked people telling me I can't do things just because you can't, or that's the rules, or, rules are in place. You know, you would hope to better society, but there's just some laws and some rules that shouldn't be there. And I think that's why there's an evolution of these things, or an evolution in what is acceptable to think. You know, you go back and listen to interviews from the 50s about race, and you'll find like the nicest looking white lady give her opinion about what they think about maybe other kind of people moving into the neighborhood. And she'll sound like Betty Crocker and all nice, but you know, those are super racist things that you're thinking. So it's good to maybe question what we've been taught in schools, what's on the news. I think it's really important to really have sources that you trust. You know, when it comes to any of the stuff we're dealing with now, or just life in general, you know, it's good to understand why things are a certain way, but it's also good to question them too, and see how you can improve them. Because, you know, I think that's one thing I've learned through traveling is like, I've seen a lot of cultures, I've seen a lot of places. I'm like, why do they do that way? It's so much better than how we have it here. Or why can't we do that? So, you know, hopefully asking questions makes just the world a better place. It's okay to question things and to think for yourself and have an opinion, even if it's not the popular one. Maybe it will be someday. Maybe you're ahead of the curve on whatever it is you're talking about. So yeah, I think it's good to not just get into the monotony and minutia of a daily life and just accept things how they are. You know, things can always be better.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely easy to get caught up in, you know, what they want you to get, what they quote unquote try to get you caught up in. It's funny because, you know, lately I've been keeping up with kind of with school openings and things like that because it directly affects me.
Sure.
And I never go on Facebook, but because I joined a group, I started kind of doing that. And I notice how it just like, it just has this like really sad effect on just my emotions and my physical state. I'm like, I just get tense and like
it's anxious. It's toxic. Oh. Yeah. One of the greatest things I did was about 2 years ago, and I just took Facebook off my phone. And I won't say I never check Facebook, but I can't even remember the last time I read anything on it. I think the only thing I use it for is like, it's a good reminder of when people's birthdays are. And I think that's the only thing I use it for. And unfortunately, our world is so connected to that stupid website, even when you need that website to sign you into the current website you're on. I think it's just the only reason I've kept it, but no, I haven't really posted anything. I've stayed off of it. Like I said, you can get bogged down with all that stuff. And, you know, for me, it just wasn't what I wanted to read. It wasn't bringing happiness. It was just a bunch of stuff that just was wasting my time. So I made a conscious effort to not look at it. And I would say it was a very good idea. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally was like that too. I didn't look at it for honestly, like years, like it had been years since I posted anything or whatever, but it's just like trying to stay up to date kind of on like what the parents were saying and stuff like that. Cause it affects me now again.
Sure.
I have taken some action where like it has helped me, but at the end of the day, it's like, you got to know when to cut it off because it can serve its purpose, but it can very easily, I mean, it's a slippery slide.
It is. And one thing that you probably realize too is, you know, the way those websites work is like, you're only reading and hearing about what your friends like or whatever. So you see the same stuff over and over. I always think it's kind of funny if you grab someone's phone or whatever, be like, let me see your Instagram page, or let me see your Facebook, and just look at their feed and be like, okay, is this at all similar to mine? And when you realize it's not, you're like, okay, right. There's a lot more to it than just my small group of friends and what they're posting. There's other sides of the story here. And if you keep seeing the same feed and the same stories over and over and over, your mind is going to tell you it's all true. And that's the only way that people are thinking. And it's just pigeonholing you in a little corner of small ideas. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt and, you know, expand your horizons with where you get your sources and your news and have real conversations with people. Like I love talking on the phone still. I remember the first time I got a text message, I was like, what is this? This is the dumbest thing. Why are you asking me a question like this? I didn't even understand the concept of it. I was like, I hope this doesn't catch on. I just wish people would call me. And of course, that isn't how it works anymore.
I know people are like, my phone's ringing. When is it going to stop?
Right. Why is someone calling me on my phone? Right. So, you know, I'm old enough to remember the analog days of things and appreciate those days and also appreciate where we've come and how things are a lot more efficient. But, you know, also realizing we have to draw that fine line for ourselves to not go insane. And, you know, our brains haven't evolved fast enough to process all the information that's coming at us right now. Like, if you think about this, and I could talk forever about it, and I think it's one of the reasons why you see so much mental illness right now, is because our brains haven't evolved fast enough to deal with the amount of data coming at us. We need thousands of more years to be able to deal with it. But our technology has exponentially increased faster than our minds have evolved. And you're seeing it stress people out, and I mean, information's coming too fast. And, you know, even how that relates to my job, it's like people can reach you at all hours of the night and they expect a return answer right away because, you know, they know you sent a message, and it just can drive you nuts. You have to learn to know when to put it down and live in the analog world and, you know, appreciate the ground you're standing on and the air you're breathing and the trees around you. You can't just get sucked into these digital voids and expect anything really good to come out of it. Yeah, just my opinion. But.
No, I mean, you're totally right. It's like, how stressful is it, even just like on Instagram when you DM someone or they DM you, the fact that it says seen and you can't control, it's like red receipts.
Right.
Like you can't control it. And I mean, usually it's like, it's not a big deal, but it can, you know, especially if it's in your job and like, you know, that like people are expecting a reply right away. It's like, how do you set those boundaries that you can stay sane? Mm-hmm. And then you don't set a precedent for being available around the clock.
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, tour managing has been the thing that I've gotten roped into. And though I love it, there are aspects of the job I don't love. And part of that is like I said, being available 24/7. Especially after we're getting done shows at 2 or 3 in the morning and maybe getting 5 or 6 hours of sleep if we're lucky before me driving us to the next city or whatever's happening. So, you know, I just wasn't sleeping. My phone would be buzzing. So I just kind of made a deal with myself. I'm like, all right, when I go to bed, I'm going into airplane mode and nothing's going to be buzzing on my phone. And if the world's ending, well, I'll find out when I wake up. you know, what are you going to do about it? So, that's been the gift to myself that I do. I don't sleep with my phone in the bedroom anymore. Even at home, I just put it away. I'm like, I'm done for the night. I don't want to be looking at it for any reason. It's just something that I found helps me and my rhythms and, you know, keeping sane. And I know that that wouldn't necessarily work for a lot of other people, but for me, it's helped. And I'm still alive and I'm still, you know, on the spinning earth right now. Everything seems okay.
Was it easy to do or did it take you a few tries?
No, it was really easy. I luckily don't have a very addictive personality. I'm that guy who used to smoke cigarettes like 14 to 17 years old and then quit cold turkey for 6 months. I know a lot of people can't do that. I've just been lucky to just be like, all right, when I'm done with something, I'm done with it. I don't use things as vices, especially not my phone. So no, it wasn't hard when it came to this.
That's good. That smoking thing is really funny though, because I feel like that's kind of smoking is like a perfect example of the type of personality you have, whether it's addictive or not. Mm-hmm. And what can motivate you to actually stop a habitual thing? Because yeah. I also was a smoker, like on and off, but I found that I mostly did it for social reasons. Mm-hmm. I did it because I liked to get a break. So like if I was at a show,
yeah,
I would leave so I could, you know, just to have a break, just to have an excuse to leave. You know, mm-hmm. if you're at a bar and you're hanging out with people and like you need a break, like you just go. Totally. So that was kind of, it was my crutch, right? I was using that as an excuse to leave when mm-hmm. I could have just left the entire
right.
time.
Yep. Right.
I mean, it mm-hmm. really isn't that complicated.
Right.
But when I decided, so I stopped because I started running and I was taking high intensity interval training classes. And like, you can't do that
no.
and smoke. So then I just stopped. Like, and
right.
it wasn't even hard. And it's really a testament to the power of our mind mm-hmm. to just do what we want.
Yeah. The mind's a very powerful thing, you know, especially when it's open and functioning. So yeah, it's, you know, you can do whatever you want. You just got to convince yourself that that's what you want.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. It's that point. So what is something that you've learned from traveling that you've been able to think about now that you haven't been able to move around very much?
Well, traveling is, it's a weird thing for me. I used to hate traveling as a kid. I had for whatever reason, a fear of flying. I probably watched the news and saw that a plane blew up and I just didn't want to go on it. So for the longest time, you know, the idea of traveling was not something that ever spoke to me. I was kind of a homebody. That was more, you know, my teenage years and younger. But as I've gone older, I've really just, there's just an affinity for traveling for so many reasons. And I've done a lot of solo traveling. And I think that is my response to touring, especially when I tour manage, which is pretty much every gig I do now, where, you know, you're herding cats, you're in charge of the monkeys, you're whatever you want to say. And some groups are easier than others, but the bottom line is if something goes wrong, you're in charge. And, you know, maybe those trips, I try to make the most of all these trips. If there's a day off, I always try to do something, or you know, I don't want to just sit in a hotel. So I think traveling for me has allowed me to see different cultures, experience different foods, which is something that I'm a total foodie guy. So I loved making that part of my travel. I love hiking and doing that kind of thing. So when I solo travel, I'm not taking care of a band. I think it gives you, the way I describe it is you're not looking out for anyone but yourself. So you're honest with how am I going to spend the day for me? I don't have to cater to the band or, you know, your family or your friends if you're with them. It's just you and the place you are, and the world is your oyster to do whatever you want with. And I think it gives you a really good chance to become honest with yourself of what is important to you, what makes you happy. You know, what would you decide to do with all the time in the world? So I think the trips I've done have kind of reflected that, and have done a lot of, you know, spiritual nature kind of stuff, trying to, you know, there's a lot of beautiful places in this world, not just in this country. And I've been lucky enough to visit them. And I think exploring and finding these places inspires me to find more of these places. Cause I wouldn't say there's endless, but like there's enough for a lifetime and then some. So yeah, I have a whole list of places I want to visit. There's just, and revisit. I think traveling is something, if you can afford to do it both financially and time-wise, especially if you don't have a family, like I don't have right now, go do it. You're going to learn more about yourself. You're going to learn more about the world. You can bring those ideas back and share them. And, you know, it always amazes me the people who tell me they don't like a place that they've never been. I just don't understand that. I don't understand how someone who hasn't left their 20-mile radius of home could tell you that, like, they don't ever want to go to Japan or they have no interest in going to Italy. It's just, I don't know. I guess it's just a different person.
Well, I mean, it's probably comfortable, right? Sometimes it's mm-hmm. easy to just be comfortable in
sure.
where you are in your little bubble.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And for a lot of people, I'd say the majority of people, that's what they do. And that's how the American lifestyle has made people, where, you know, you work 5 days and then you're off to work. And it's just like never ending. For me, I've really tried to avoid that kind of thing. I've never had a 9-to-5 job. I've never, quote unquote, worked for the man. I kind of want to, if I'm doing work, I want to work for myself or at least someone else that I believe in. If I'm going to travel with someone, I'm going to travel with someone I like or myself. You know, I don't know. Life's too short to do things you don't want to be doing if you can avoid it.
Yeah. And it's interesting that, you know, when you're traveling and you're in different countries, when you're just in a different place, even mm-hmm. if it's just a new neighborhood, you know, it's that feeling of being uncomfortable and not mm-hmm. really knowing your way around.
Yeah.
I feel like that could be something that could really help you develop you as a person.
It's wonderful. I mean, you know, when I go to Asia and no one's really speaking a lot of English over there, it's like I've now reverted back to like what a 5th or 5th grader knows. You know, it's like, okay, well, I don't know all the laws here. I don't know how to get around. Like, I have to just kind of figure this out. And there's something that's really just fun and silly about that, especially when you make mistakes. And you're like, oh, right, that's not how you do that here. I think, yeah, there's just a challenge to make the time you have over there, wherever you are, just as valuable and well used as possible. You know, my vacations don't involve me like sitting on a lounger for 6 days, you know, soaking in the sun. That sounds awful to me.
Yeah. You're not just chilling, right?
No.
But it's like, it makes me think of kind of like you're like reliving your formative years mm-hmm. every time you go to a new place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exciting to visit new places and see how other people are living and see what they're doing and culturally what they're eating and even what time of day they're waking up or what native animals are around or just anything. It's like, you just got to open your eyes to things and you'll see it. You just have to be ready to go there and be willing to be shown different things. I think for a lot of people, it takes them out of their comfort zones. I have friends like this who, yeah, they just don't want to leave their house and that's fine. That works for them. For me, I've been seeking more and yeah, that's what traveling has done for me. It's been amazing. Hopefully we'll be able to do it very, very soon. It's been difficult, stuck here. You know, it's the longest it's been since I saw Nirvana when I was 13 of not seeing a concert in my life. Like that's weird, you know, as someone who sees upwards of 100 shows a year or more, you know, it's been different and it's like, I'm just trying to focus on other forms of happiness or things to fill my time.
What is something that you want to share that you've learned throughout your career and you've learned through your travels mm-hmm. that helps you be a better person every day?
Well, with regards to this industry, you know, I get asked a lot, like, what do you, you know, maybe people getting into this industry, are like, well, what would you recommend? What's your advice? And my first piece of advice is specifically when it comes to the music industry, or really any industry, especially creative ones you're doing, is make sure you're in it for the right reasons. If you're in it because you think you're going to make a lot of money, I would say just start playing the lottery because you're probably going to have a better chance than this business. But if you're in it for the reasons of it being your passion, like I'm a crew guy, I guess people would say I'm an audio guy. But I'm in it for the music. I'm in it for the excitement of being in a concert. You got to ask yourself with any job, why are you doing this? So if you're in it for money, it's not the business for you. If you're in it for meeting unforgettable people and seeing unforgettable places and being in a work environment that might be different than sitting at a desk 9 to 5 and punching in and out, then this could be exactly what you want. I think how that relates to life is just, you know, to me, the word is happiness. And it's like, you got to figure out how to maintain happiness. And that's different for everyone. And it's being honest with yourself, what makes you happy, and then pursuing it and spending as much time as you can, you know, trying to be happy. So, you know, do I at times hate my job? I wouldn't say hate, but like, yeah, there are times where it's like I'm exhausted or I'm dealing with people that I don't want to deal with because I have a bad attitude or, you know, I always say like, sometimes I can't take you to the moon in a Jeep. We can't do that. You know, when people's expectations are just beyond, you know, the normal realm of things. But, you know, for all those negative things, I'm rewarded with getting to play venues that all my heroes have played and see places that I've always wanted to be and really have these special moments that, you know, you don't want to take for granted because you never know when they're going to come back around. And, you know, through my career and the advancements of it, you know, luckily it's been happening more and more often, but you know, it's weird. It's, you know, we don't know when we're going back to work. We don't know any of this. It's like, if this is it, you know, can I be happy with what I've done? And I can truthfully say yes. And I hope there's a lot more to go, but I've been able to cross off a lot of things on that list, venues mixed or bands worked with. There's just, you know, it's better to have goals than plans, I've found. And, you know, just keep making new goals for yourself and try to achieve it and be true to yourself and be happy. You know, it's easier said than done, but it's all about being honest with yourself and like, am I on the right path right now? And if not, do I need to pivot and, you know, try something else? So I'd say that's to anyone, you know, if you're not happy what you're doing, well, figure out how to stop doing it. If you're in a job that you don't like, you know, maybe you got to quit that job, because if you're in a job that takes up all your time, you've now closed every other job opportunity out there, you know, and that's a lesson I learned. You know, when I was in 2010, I decided to quit my job at a really great venue in LA because I realized financially it wasn't going to be good. I was realizing I got really good at mixing this room, but I'm not necessarily getting any better. I'm getting really good at mixing a certain genre of music, but I would like to expand upon that to get better with my skills. So I quit my job. And, you know, my parents thought I was crazy and I didn't have another job lined up and I didn't know what I was going to do. But what it did was allow me to then open other doors and see if those were worth walking through. And then that's how I got a gig doing. I worked with a guy who won American Idol, and you know, that was the biggest audio I'd done at the time. And then they asked me to tour manage, and that's how I got into all that. So if I had not quit my job at the club, none of that would have happened. And I would have probably still been sitting there. So sometimes you got to just take a leap of faith. And I think you have to be calculated with that. And you have to, you know, be smart about when and where you do that. But if you're not happy, change things and see if you can find that happiness from another source or by losing a sense of stress. You know, stress to me, I think is I've learned with my illness, it's like the number one killer. And I find that people in the US are super stressed about mainly their work. And I think there are better ways to approach it. I think other countries have done better jobs, you know, doing say 4-day work weeks and just, you know, budgeting time better. I think people just need to be honest with themselves of what's important to them and really go after that goal.
Well, now's a really great time to.
Yeah, it's a great time to do it now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to really just figure it out, like ask yourself those hard questions, you know, am I happy? If right. I'm not happy, what am I willing to do about it?
Yeah, exactly.
Am I going to take the time to sit with myself and really listen to myself when mm-hmm. I try to figure out what it is that I truly enjoy. And it takes a long time. I mean, I'm 32 years old. I'm just figuring it out. So, yep. You know, so I mean, I think everyone should be patient with themselves. Some people don't figure it out until they're well into their 60s and older.
Yep. And never stop figuring it out, you know?
Yes.
And evolve what figuring it out means, you know? As your life goes on, there's different priorities and, you know, just keep being honest with yourself. And is this the right path?
Yes. And, you know, things change, but it's okay. You know, you just have to give yourself some grace, mm-hmm. give yourself the room to try new things and to fail and to get back up and to learn what you can.
Exactly.
Day.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Adam. I really appreciate your time. It was so nice talking to you.
Yes. Great to talk to you too.
Have a good night.
Okay. Same to you.
Bye.
Bye.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Adam Labov. 1. Being strong is all about mindset, and every tough experience we overcome builds grit and resilience. 2. If you don't have a support system, it's important to go seek it out, because there's times that you'll get knocked down and you'll need help back up, and that's okay. 3. find time to step away from social media and set your phone to do not disturb or airplane mode when you check out for the night. Your mind and spirit will thank you. 4, don't forget to ask yourself, why am I doing this and does it make me happy? If today were my last day on earth, would I be happy with everything I've done? Be honest with yourself. And 5, get out of your comfort zone. Think for yourself. Question authority, and above all, stay curious. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Adam a follow on Instagram @Adam_Labov. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow the Tour Life on Instagram @TheTourLifePodcast.